Armed Forces Radio rebroadcasts The Kate Smith Hour.
Hello, servicemen and women. This is Ted Collins signing on another Kate Smith show. Another visit from America's Songbird with you soldiers, sailors, marines, and Coast Guardsmen of the United Nations as our special guests. And now, your hostess, Kate Smith.
Thanks, Ted, and hi, you fellows and gals. On a tiny little trolley in Trolley, he was riding just to see the scenery. As it rumbled along, he spied a grin that lingered above a lovely chin. One day on a tiny trolley in Trolley, she was everything a fair Colleen should be. Just as sweet as any girl in Kankakee. As his fluttery heart began to spin, he said, "You're an angel or her twin." One day on a tiny trolley in Trolley, she was very coy and impish, hard to handle or caress. It was all of a week till she weakened and she said yes. So they paid a call on Father Paul Dundee, and the Irish came from many miles to see how daughter of Timothy O'Flynn permitted a Yankee grin to win. One day on a tiny trolley in Trolley. Very coy and impish, hard to handle or caress. It was all of a week till she weakened and she said yes. So they paid a call on Father Paul Dundee, and the Irish came from many miles to see how a daughter of Timothy O'Flynn permitted a Yankee grin to win. One day on a tiny trolley in Trolley.
Bring you that scintillating piano that announces the presence of the pride of the Lincoln Hotel's brew room, the Count himself, Count Basie. Tonight, the Count plays his own original composition, Back in Nakasaki. Thank you.
It is indeed a pleasure to welcome to our show tonight one of the great ladies of the theater. Her list of stage hits includes many of the great plays of our day, and her name on the marquee of any theater means a hit show. We have invited her here tonight to add a memorable performance to our list of radio hits in the original drama by Jean Halloway, based on the life of Elizabeth Barrett Browning. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Jane Cowell. Miss Cowell will be supported by Myron McCormick as Robert Browning, and Richard Gordon, John Moore, and Joan Tetzel. Elizabeth Barrett was a poetess of some prestige. A bedridden invalid, but at 38 years of age, still an enchanting woman. Robert Browning was dashing and handsome, and at 33, a poet of promise, but modest achievement. Both of them had books published, and the lady on the couch and the man in his study read each other's poetry. Out of sincere mutual admiration, they began to correspond. We pick up their story at the close of the first meeting.
I must go, Miss Barrett. You see, I don't want to stay too long and wear out my welcome. I've waited so long to see you.
It was kind of you to come.
These past few months, I've wondered so about you. I've read your poetry and your letters, and I've tried to imagine what my lady in the ivory tower was like.
Oh, I'm afraid I've never thought of this room as an ivory tower. Sometimes it seemed more like a prison. I've had to spend so many hours here on this couch. I get dreadful cold, you know.
I'd like to take you away from England.
What?
I'd like to take you to Italy.
Oh.
Where you could lie in the sun and drink red wine and eat Italian bread and cheese. Why, in no time at all, you'd be taking long walks in the mountains and attending the festivals and riding out to sea with the fishermen.
Oh, how lovely that would be.
It would be heaven. Italy would be your kingdom and I would be your slave.
Oh, Mr. Browning, it sounds very tempting, but it's a lovely dream, Miss Browning.
Shall I tell you something about my dreams, Miss Barrett?
Oh, please do.
They have a way of coming true.
Elizabeth, my dear, you've forgotten the time. You're already late for your nap.
Excuse me, sir. I'll go at once. I hope I haven't tired you.
Tired me? Why, do you know, Mr. Browning, I not only feel very rested, but I feel positively sunburned.
Then may I come again next Tuesday?
Please. If you don't, we shall be most disappointed.
Good day, Mr. Browning.
Good day, sir. Good day, Miss Barrett.
Good day.
You have a high color, Elizabeth. I trust you aren't feverish,
oh,
my dear.
Oh, not a bit of it. I've just been out in the sun and the wind, that's all. You know what I did this afternoon, Father? I stood in the prow of a little Italian fishing boat, and the wind blew back my hair. For a little while, I was away from this room, and I was happier than I've been in a long time.
If I didn't know your age and your great common sense, Elizabeth, I'd say you were talking like a schoolgirl who had just lost her heart.
What does age and common sense have to do with losing one's heart, Father?
Why, since you asked me, Elizabeth, I'll put it this way. Browning is on the threshold of his 30s, you of your 40s. The difference between those ages is the difference between youth and middle age.
Oh.
As for common sense, well, my dear, you are an invalid. As far as life and love are concerned, you must be an onlooker. That is the way God has chosen for you. Here, I'm speaking as though there was something between you and Mr. Browning, which is ridiculous to begin with.
Yes. Yes, isn't it?
Elizabeth, are you crying?
A little.
Why, my dear?
Oh, it was so lovely being young, even for a few moments. It isn't fair. It isn't fair that I should be middle-aged and have had nothing. I want to get out of this room, Father. I want to know what it's like to run in the sunshine. I want to know what it's like to sit outside in the moonlight as late as I want to. I want to know what it's like to be kissed.
Elizabeth, you don't know what you're saying. You're overtired and hysterical. You'd better take your nap.
No, I'm not tired. And I'm not going to take a nap. Do you know what I'm going to do, Father? I'm going to write a letter to Mr. Browning.
John Kenyon, I am in love. Do you hear me? I'm in love with Elizabeth Barrett.
Robert, I'm very sorry.
Sorry? Why?
Well, for one thing, Edward Barrett has always said he never would permit any of his daughters to marry. I'm sorry you met. No happiness will ever come of it.
Oh, you're mistaken, John. I am going to marry Elizabeth Barrett. And it's going to be that marriage that never was before on land or sea. I knew it the moment I walked into her room today. And I think she knew it, too. I'm so sure that I'm going to write her a letter right now and tell her exactly how I feel. She's shut up in a castle now, guarded by dragons and ogres. But I'll storm the castle and carry her off across my saddle.
You're going to write her there?
Yes. She'll understand. She's my lady, and she'll understand.
Elizabeth, what's wrong? Has Mr. Browning made you unhappy?
Oh, Henrietta, I wish I'd never met him. Not knowing him, I was content. If I wasn't happy, I didn't know it.
You're in love with him.
I despise him. Henrietta, he's written me a most upsetting letter, completely lacking in respect and dignity.
What does he say?
He says he loves me.
Well, what more do you want?
Why, I want respect and propriety. I'm too old to have a lover storming at the gate. Father was right. It makes me feel ridiculous.
Be kind to him, Elizabeth. Give yourself a chance for happiness.
I've written him a note. I'll read you part of it. Sir, you don't know what pain you gave me in speaking so wildly. You've said some intemperate things. They'll die out between you and me alone like a misprint between you and the printer. If there should be one word of answer attempted to this, or a reference, I must not, I will not see you again.
Well, you made rather a fool of yourself, didn't you?
Yes, rather.
Now maybe you'll forget about Miss Elizabeth Barrett.
Forget her? I told you I was going to marry her. When she burrows down through about 50 layers of conventions to her heart, she'll find my name written across it. In the meantime, I'll wait. I'll be the polite caller, the solicitor's friend, and oh, how that's going to annoy her. I shall answer this little letter of hers by saying that she completely misinterpreted my meaning. I will say that I was thinking of her as a poetess and a famous figure, not as a woman. After all, who am I, Robert Browning, to think of her in any other light? And then I shall say that I will call on Tuesday next, and I am obediently hers. therefore, my considered opinion that the situation in English politics today is exceedingly grave and demands much study.
Yes, of course. I agree with you implicitly. Your letters this week have certainly been mainly concerned with politics.
It's a vital subject.
Yes, so, and the so one it would thing... seem. You see, I was quite right, Henrietta. Mr. Browning has nothing whatever of a personal nature to say on his recent visit.
But you forbade him to say anything about love.
Oh, yes, well, but he has a mind of his own, hasn't he? It's been a most pleasant afternoon, Mr. Browning. Shall I be seeing you next Tuesday?
I'm afraid I must excuse myself next Tuesday. I've promised to attend a party.
Oh, of course. By the way, I've read a new poem of yours that someone sent me in the mail. It's a love poem. It sounds as though you were a little bitter when you wrote it.
I was only as bitter as the lady who inspired it made me.
Oh, how I wish I knew her, Mr. Browning. Obviously, she holds your heart.
Perhaps someday you will meet her, Miss Barrett.
Yes, I do hope so, Mr. Browning.
Maybe I've been a conceited fool, John. Just because you hold your arms up to the stars doesn't mean that you can reach them, does it? Tonight I think she doesn't love me. Tonight I think she never will.
Can this be Robert Browning talking? Where's your confidence? Where's your assurance?
Out the window, trying to catch up with my heart. I think I shall have to rescue all three. I think I must be off to Italy with them. Alone. Miss Barrett, there's something I must tell you. We may not be meeting for a time. I'm off to Italy in a week or so.
Well, then I shall miss you very much. So that's why you seem so gay this afternoon. Has the lady of the poem relented and decided to be kind to you?
I'm afraid the lady of the poem is beyond my reach forever. Elizabeth, is there nothing human about you at all?
What?
Are you nothing but the statue of a woman, the shell of a woman? Is there no fire to you, no warmth? Have you no heart at all?
I've enough of a heart to be hurt. I have that much heart.
Have you? I doubt it. Elizabeth, that first afternoon when I walked into this room, I knew with a sureness beyond all doubt that you and I were meant to be together. I tried to tell you that, but your prim, corseted little mind wouldn't listen. You were offended, shocked, insulted. I should never have come to this house again. But I hoped that you would come to realize and feel the same things I was feeling. Well, obviously, I expected too much. You aren't capable of love. You're just what you want to be, a pretty invalid sitting by the window waiting to die.
Oh, how you must hate me to be able to speak like that.
No, I don't hate you. I feel sorry for you. Well, Miss Barrett?
There doesn't seem much for me to say, Mr. Brown.
Good day, Miss Barrett.
Good day, Mr. Brown.
Well, Elizabeth, still crying, I see. Maybe you realize now that I know what's best for you. You've made a pretty fool of yourself. You should be crying.
That's not why I'm crying. I'm crying because I'm lonely. And I'm crying because of a lot of things I didn't say. Oh, Father, what shall I do? What can I do?
Now that you've come to your senses, you'll be all right. I'm going to take you to the country where you can rest. You've become too active these past few months. You need the peace of solitude. You need to become again the daughter I have always protected and cherished. You have forgotten these past few weeks how much of an invalid you are.
Yes. Yes, I have. Father, I was in love with Mr. Browning.
That was a rather naive fancy for you, wasn't it, Elizabeth? You know now what you must do.
Yes. Yes, I know now. What I must do.
Elizabeth.
Robert, may I speak to you just for a moment?
Why, of course. Come in.
Robert, since I may never see you again, I must be honest with you as you've been honest with me. After you'd gone that first day, I sat writing you a letter. I tore it up, but I'd like to tell you what it said as nearly as I can remember. It said, "My dearest one, I, who have never written a love letter in my life, am writing my first. You're gone now, and yet my room is full of you. I see you everywhere I turn. It seems that all my life my heart has asked a question, and now I know the answer. I've always been a cold thing, a pure, poor excuse for a woman, and yet I believe that if you could take my hand, I could follow you anywhere and be all things to you. Robert, I don't know if you can forgive me for not saying this long ago, but you see, no one's ever loved me before, and it's human nature to mistrust dreams that come true too suddenly.
Oh, my darling. My darling. You will marry me. You will come with me to Italy.
I'll come with you, Robert.
When? It must be soon. I have passage for next week, Elizabeth.
Then I'll arrange to leave the house early Monday morning with my maid. Father will think we're going for our regular morning walk. If you'll make the arrangement, perhaps we can be married sometime in the forenoon. I'm going for a walk, Father.
Don't walk too far, my dear. And take it slowly.
Father?
Yes?
Come here. Let me kiss you goodbye. We'll miss one another, you and I.
I'll be here when you return, Elizabeth. You know, my dear, you're looking exceptionally attractive and young today.
I am young today, Father. I am young today. Goodbye, Father. Goodbye.
That was magnificent. Please come and visit us again very soon.
Now Kate sings, "Suddenly It's Spring."
Why is my heart dancing? Imagine dancing. You look at me and suddenly it's spring. Why do I keep crying? Not I'm young and free, and suddenly it's spring. High on a hilltop, love is calling. Someone should wish me happy. No more being lonely, can I be lonely? You look at me and suddenly